Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate, and this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, along with my co-host for our monthly ethics sessions, Difficult Decisions in Healthcare, Dr. Gregory Eastwood from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. Welcome back, Dr. Eastwood.
Nice to be back, Tricia.
And we have a distinguished guest with us this morning. I'm hoping you'll introduce him to our listeners.
Yeah, he's a friend and colleague of mine of many years, Professor Thomas Dennison from the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Among his several titles, he is the director of the program in health services management and policy there. And he's going to be very useful this morning when we talk about the healthcare reform issues.
I think so. Good morning and welcome, Dr. Dennison. And I love that health policy because we're going to get into a discussion of where policy meets ethics. We're going to start, Dr. Eastwood, if you will, remind us, last month we talked about, I believe, four principles of ethics that really apply to this healthcare reform conversation.
Yes, they're the big four, as we call them, in bioethics. One is beneficence. That's an old term dating back to the Hippocratic era, 2,500 years ago. It just means doing good, trying to do good for the patient and for our society in this case. Non-maleficence, the second, is avoiding harm. And you can see how beneficence and non-maleficence are two sides of the same issue many times. Autonomy, something we value highly in our society. That means being able to make decisions ourselves after we've had the right information. And sometimes our own autonomy comes in conflict with the autonomy of someone else. We can think of this sometimes also in terms of freedoms. And then the last one is justice, and that means fairness or justice in the conventional sense. And justice as applies to an individual, and also justice as it applies to society.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reasonable, fair distribution of resources, for example? That would be justice. So, Professor Dennison, you are obviously very well-known and adept in your abilities as someone who knows healthcare policy and so on. The question I have for you to begin is, how do these principles of ethics or concepts of ethics relate to policy? And do policymakers, as far as you know, pay attention to ethical principles?
Well, that's a loaded question.
We could spend a long time on
yes,
that
we
one.
Yes, we could.
Well, I'm not sure that the policymakers, the politicians, and the bureaucrats necessarily use the four words of ethics, or even perhaps are familiar with the four words of ethics, but though the principles embodied in those words are kind of cooked into the policies expressed through legislation generally or through regulation that they propose. The legislation is grounded in values and beliefs, and those values and beliefs are informed by the four ethical principles. And I think you can look at the content of regulation or legislation and find where those principles actually apply.
Whether or not you agree with them. Because sometimes they're other people's principles or values, aren't they?
Well, it's very clear that we have a partisan approach to healthcare reform in Washington.
Yes, we do.
And that's largely grounded in philosophy around the economic engine and whether we should have a market-based economy or whether we should have more programs and policies that deal with a social orientation rather than an economic orientation.
And that really is the big question. And I believe I mentioned last month, one of the things that I've written about is that there are only really two ways of looking at healthcare reform. And one is where you value lives and you look at lives and life is your number one. And the other is you look at money questions. And it's a capitalistic society and we need to make sure that for the good of the group, we look at money questions. And in policy, how do you look at those things?
Well, I think that this boils down to economic policy and is asking the question whether healthcare in our country is a social right, is a good that should be made available to everybody regardless of income, regardless of means, or whether it is a commodity that is sold on the private market that if you can afford it, you can buy it. And we have tended, the way our healthcare system has evolved over the past 100 years, has evolved in such a way that if you can afford it, we have excellent healthcare and you can buy whatever you wish to buy.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford it, we don't let you publicly die. you can access healthcare services at in extremis through the emergency room. The ambulance will come whether you have money or not. And we kind of, the people who believe in the pure market system, kind of cover their conscience with, well, you know, there are safety net things out there. We have emergency rooms.
Yeah, everybody does have access in one way.
And the law does require hospitals and emergency facilities in this country to take care of emergency situations. So we actually find ourselves in somewhat contradictory situations sometimes. We are obligated, and indeed we want to take care of acute illness, emergency illness, but then when people don't have the means to pay for more chronic care and more ongoing care, we can't really provide it.
And isn't that something that happens, is that somebody who does not have the means can get very sick, can go to the emergency room, that emergency will be taken care of, but perhaps if they'd had care all along, they wouldn't have gotten so sick that they needed to be in the emergency room. How does the ethics and the policy tie together, Dr. Eastwood?
Well, I can tell you that there are, I think, reliable studies to show that people who don't have health insurance are sicker. At least they delay treatment. They don't get the preventive care that even vaccinations, things like that. And they delay treatment. Then they come to a facility where it's very expensive. And morbidity, that means the bad consequences of illness and mortality are higher in people who don't have insurance. I'd like to just sort of reprise or go back to something that Tom said earlier about healthcare. Is it a public good or not? And just remind us all that we have a number of things we'd hardly even think about as public goods in this country. Education is one of them.
Yes.
Now, of course, we can send our children to private school if we have the means, but education is provided for everybody.
And there's a reason for that. We look at it as good for all of society, most of society to be well educated.
No one thinks about the public good of providing police or fire protection. In the early history of our country, I understand that fire protection sometimes was not a public good. Sure. And if you didn't pay your fire insurance, the firemen and women maybe at that time would not put out the fire in
sure.
your house.
And maybe you had insurance, but your next door neighbor didn't. What if your next door neighbor's house caught fire?
That's right. And postal service is another one and so on. So we do have a number of public goods that we really accept, and a number of European countries, other countries of similar socioeconomic status as the United States put healthcare in that same category.
Yes, they do. Dr. Dennison, talk to us about you being a policy studier. There are other countries that seem to have good systems, and they maybe even are public and private systems. Do you work at all on those or pull out the best or the worst of those kinds of programs?
Well, we have a very good medical care system, not a healthcare system.
There's a distinction.
Our medical care system is oriented to cure. It's oriented to treatment. It's not oriented to prevention. It's oriented to what gets paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Many other countries, European countries, and I think we can best compare ourselves to the OECD, the European countries, and look at their medical care and healthcare systems. They started with a much more social orientation. They started as social insurance programs. Germany had the first social insurance program under Bismarck in the 1880s. And if you look at the evolution of those systems in Europe, they were designed to cover first the working people who were in high-risk occupations, and it extended to the rest of the community. The government always had a much stronger role to play in those systems and the development of those systems than in the United States. When we were at the same point in time, we had a very weak federal government. States' rights really prevailed. At the turn of the century, physicians got control of the system, but from about 1910 and beyond. And it's not the government that drove the development of the healthcare system as much as the physicians and the sovereignty of the physician model that drove the economics.
You know, you raised that word social, and I'm going to jump right on that, because one of the fears on the part of many people, and then some of the interests on the part of others, is that term socialized medicine. Are we moving into a system as if that's a really horrible, horrible thing? And Dr. Eastwood, I know you've got some opinions about that.
Well, socialized medicine means many things to many people, but I think a strict definition of socialized medicine would be a health system or medical system that is owned and operated and run financed everything by the government.
And we know that they have that in Great Britain, for instance.
Well, and we have it in this country, and it's called military medicine. And to a large extent,
that.
The Veterans Administration. Veterans Administration is 160, 70 hospitals, a very, actually a good system because it has up-to-date information technology and so on, and it partners with U.S. medical schools for almost 60 years now. It has done that to the benefit of the veterans.
You know, I want to talk about that some more. We need to take a quick break. It's time to go to the news. But let's pick up where we're leaving off right here. Let's pick up with the VA system and talking about how socialized medicine really has a very strong foothold right here in the United States already. Can both you gentlemen hang in there with me through the news?
Okay.
And listeners, we do need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments. We'll pick up talking about socialized medicine and healthcare reform. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.